This podcast replay is brought to you by Choice Mortgage Bank. Fix rates at an all-time low. Call Michael, 561-441-2730. Refinance or lower those monthly payments. Get off the fence. Stop renting. Call 561-441-2730.
Back, and we promised you that the great Richmond Webb would be kind enough to join us. As a beat reporter, I used to bother Richmond Webb every single day, him and Keith Sims in the locker room, ask him all kinds of stupid questions, and they just say, kid, get away from me. But he is kind enough now to join us and talk a little Miami Dolphins football. Did I bug you way too much back in the day, Richmond? How was I?
No, you good. How you doing, Big O?
I'm doing great, man. I can't complain. I'm doing better now, I'm telling you, since they put Chris Greer in place. Because I wrote last year in The Athletic, and I said it on radio. I said, get rid of Gase, get rid of Tannenbaum, and please put Chris Greer in place. Because he's been back there behind the scenes waiting for his opportunity. Nobody ever listens to him. Nobody ever does anything with him. And finally, I'm seeing a real football guy take over. What do you think?
Oh, no question. With him, Coach Flores, the way they're doing it, I think they got the right people in place. And, you know, what I would always try to tell fans is, you know, just be patient. If we can get through this year, you know, we're going to be good, but we're going to build it the right way. We're not going to just keep guys because we drafted them. If they don't work out, you know, we let them go. So I'm happy thus far, and now it's starting to pay dividends. You see where early in the season we're not making as many penalties, and you're also seeing that where we'd always play good the first half and kind of lose it the second half, now we're starting to finish games. And the guys always giving great effort, so I'm looking forward to it. I think we're in a great position right now.
Yeah, listen, Richmond, I love the way they're building it, how they tore it all the way down, because this is called a rebuild. It's not called a tank, all right? Because I keep telling people, if you're actually resetting the team so you can spend the money and the picks, that's not called tanking. That's called resetting the team and rebuilding it. But whatever, okay? Tanking is Mike Brown in Cincinnati that doesn't spend like he should. Tanking is Jeffrey Loria with the Marlins that never really tried. Tanking is Donald Sterling when he owned the Clippers. That's tanking, that you're never really going all out to win. The Dolphins have always gone all out to win. They may not have done things the right way, but they're always going all out to win. That's the part that frustrates me, that people don't see.
Yeah, people don't see, and then I see what a lot of people, even with that, and even after we won a couple games, I've seen people say, well, we don't need to win anymore because we need the first pick in the draft. I'm like, if we just need to pick the right three people in the draft, you can pick the first guy in the draft, and he turns out to be a bust. So you just want to do your due diligence, go through the process, and select the three guys that's going to produce and come in and make it a better football team. So, if we went all the way out, we still got three picks, and we get the right three guys at the right positions to help turn his franchise around. That's what's important.
Here, Richmond, this is what I want you to explain, because you've been in the locker room and you've done this. Now, I've been in the locker room covering you guys, so this is the part I don't understand, especially when it comes from the media, because it's really some stupid-ass crap. Well, okay, well, the team should tank and not try. Oh, the team shouldn't win. The fact that they're winning now is amazing for next year. I try to tell people, what do you think? Players are going to hang around and not try and maybe even get injured along the way and just lose games? And then next year, when the new crop of players comes in and they ask the old players, well, how do I do this? What do I do this? What are they supposed to say? Oh, well, last year we didn't try. We were tanking. That's the importance of winning, Richmond. Explain to people that the guys that are having success now, they are the foundation to teach the guys next year that come in, this is how we do it in this culture. It's kind of like what the Miami Heat have been doing for 20 plus years with Pat Riley. Every new player that comes in is taught not only by coaches, but the old players that are there, hey, this is how we do things. That's why it's important to establish this year.
No question. And that was how it was when I came in. You know, Marino, Duper, and Clayton were the guys that stood out in the offensive huddle. And it was already, you know, they already had the discipline, the reputation of what the expectations were. Coach Shula was there, so the coaches not only reinforced it, but the veteran players that were there. And so it was an expectation from the time you got drafted, not just to say I'm in the NFL, but, you know, you're part of an organization or franchise that's known for winning, and one of the winningest franchises, not only in football, but throughout all sports organizations. So the bar was set high, and either you had to perform, jump in, or you wasn't going to be there very long. And that's the way it's going to be now. And I take my hat off to those guys that kind of set the standard this year, because it's no fun going out losing. That's what I try to tell people. Nobody wants to just go out and say, oh, we're going to play good the first half, and then all of a sudden now we're going to just let the other team win. I mean, anything, you feel better when you win than when you lose. And it really works on your mental, just like winning does, losing does. So for these guys to go out, give the effort they have week in, week out, and now it's starting to pay dividends, now they truly believe, and they're not going to want to go back to what they were before. So, like I said, they're in a good position, but I think people just don't understand. It really don't mean no harm, but they say stuff, and you'd be like, do you really think it works that way? But it really doesn't. Yeah.
No, hey, listen, it's, oh, no, they're going to trade Tunsil anyway because they're already drafting two and they're worried about a right tackle. It's like, do you really think that, like, a GM is back there going, yeah, no, we'll get rid of Tunsil because we know we're getting Tua next year and a right tackle? It's like people play fantasy football. They think that that's how life works in the real world, and that's just not the way it goes. It's really fantasy to think that players will quit because the film is their resume. I mean, so the guys that aren't on this team next year, they're at another team, and the GM rolls the tape and says, hey, so what happened on this play and this one and this one? Oh, they told me to quit there in Miami. Oh, really? Okay, great. Here's the door. Get the hell out of here. We don't want you here. I mean, it's really amazing to think that players are just going to quit and teams are going to quit and that Chris Greer is sitting up there going, okay, let me sign the worst players possible so we can lose. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then to get all, you know, 53 guys to buy into, okay, this is the game plan. So when you lay it out on, you know, Wednesday or whatever, say, we're going to make it look good for a couple of quarters and then we're going to just turn it around. It doesn't make sense. And just like the players, coaches are, you know, they want to keep coaching. So in the event that they get another opportunity, they're going to be like, well, you guys, you couldn't, either you wasn't a good offensive line coach or receivers coach or running back. All that plays in the part. So it's not just the players, it's the coaches too. So I just kind of laugh and I just said, I just chalk it up as people, they're trying to make sense out of something that don't really make sense because they hadn't thought it all the way through.
Richmond, here's the other thing. You touched on it a little bit there. This team has got to love, not like, love Brian Flores, right? Because there's no way you get your ass kicked in the first two games as bad as they did, and then week three, you get better. Week four, you got better. Week five, every week you got better to the point now that you're winning games. That tells me that those guys, through all this adversity, they believed everything that guy was selling.
Yeah, and if you didn't believe it and you wasn't happy, he did his best to get you out of there. And I think what people are going to realize is that it's going to be about the team first. It's not going to be we might have great individual players, but it's not going to be about so-and-so. It's going to be about the Miami Dolphins team first and what's best for the team and how can we go out and execute and win. And if you're not buying into that, you're not going to be there alone. So that's what I see, and that's the way he's building it. And the guys that's there have bought into that system, and there were certain guys that, you know, wasn't happy, and all of a sudden you'd be like, whoa, they traded somebody else. I said, hey man, this guy ain't playing around. He said, we got to rebuild it anyway, so we might as well get you out of here if you're not happy. So yeah, you're right.
Richmond, there's been gradual improvement on the offensive line. What have you seen? Who has stood out to you? What do you like from certain guys?
Overall, I think they've all played. I thought they all played exceptionally well. It was a few games ago. I'm gonna tell you what really stood out to me was I think Michael Dieter is the left guard, and I think the tackle went down or whatever. It was a few games back, and he had to shift out to left tackle. And I don't think a lot of people know how tough it is to go. You know, your pass set is a little different. You know, you got wider rushers, speedier guys, this and that. But took the challenge. Didn't look like he was, you know, pouting or fretting. I'm like, you know, why me? His attitude that this is what we got to do. Went out and fought in battles and gave effort and this and that, and ended up playing pretty decent for just having to move out there in the middle of the game with, you know, no reps or nothing, a tackle like that. So that guy really stood out. But overall, as a unit, they worked hard together, and they battled. And hadn't always been pretty, but I don't see guys quitting out there. So that's what I look for.
So Dieter, to you, Richmond, looks like a keeper as a draft pick. You think that guy's turning into a winner as a third-round draft pick?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a keeper. I think so.
And by the way, doesn't it remind you of what Mark Dixon had to do did you get injured or did you leave to Cincinnati when he had to fill in for you?
I left and went to Cincinnati, and then I think Brent Smith was the tackle.
That's right, and he got hurt. That's right.
And then they bumped Dixon out there, which, you know, but Dixon, I think, had played left tackle in Canadian football, and he also played, I think, at the University of Virginia. So, you know, and he did a very, very good job out there. So,
you and I know Mark Dixon was a freak athlete. Okay, I mean that. Mm-hmm. That guy could tomahawk dunk, all right? That's how nasty that guy was as an athlete. I mean, that guy, his technique. Do you remember, Richmond? His technique, how he could lock guys in, was so good, man.
Yeah. But I think that's what made him so good. He really worked and honed his skills on being a technician. And when it was guys much bigger than him, he would get position on them, and that would enable him to maneuver them because he wasn't very big. I think it might have been 280, maybe.
Right.
But, I mean, he was strong, but he just knew how to maneuver him. You know, most guards in the NFL are probably 315, 320, 325. So for him to be that small and be that efficient and be one of the better guards in the league at the time, you know, he didn't get the recognition, but he was definitely very good.
Oh, he was a hell of a player. Although, after every game, you'd walk up to him, he'd tell you he sucked. He felt like he was getting cut every game. He was so hard on himself. It was amazing. That guy never gave himself a break. I don't know if you remember that about Mark Dixon.
Yeah, and I think that's what he needed to. He was never satisfied, so that's how he was able to go and perform at a high level. And if he kept that attitude, he would never get complacent and say, well, you know, I'm really balling it, and get comfortable. So he never allowed himself to. That was his motivational, I guess. He did the opposite. But yeah, he played pretty good, but you're right. He'd be like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be here next week. I'd be like, bruh.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Stop that.
Yeah, we would all look at him like, yeah, sure, Mark. We just watched you, dude. Yeah. You kicked ass today. Give me a freaking break. You were awesome. Let me ask you something, because covering you every day during your career, you were a quiet guy. You didn't really get into controversies. You were again, very quiet and kept to yourself. You have kind of blossomed into a social media guy. You're interacting with fans. I saw you at a fan event. What changed in Richmond Webb that became a little bit more outgoing? Because you were kind of, what was it, the football? You just wanted to keep away from us media guys? What was it that has changed with Richmond Webb now?
I do a little bit on social media, but again, even when I interact with people on social media, and there's a lot of people that's negative, and I understand, because the Dolphins hadn't been well, been really good in a while.
Yeah.
I try to find a positive spin to put on it, even though I'm interacting with them. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. I see it. I see it.
And I try to let people know, look, I hear what you're saying, but we can't look at it. We can't look at it that way. So, and most of the fans are pretty good. And but I don't ever want to get into one of those Twitter battles where people going, that's not me. I won't do that. But I do like interacting with the fans, and I think the fans kind of appreciate when they can interact with former players that played the game. You know what I'm saying? It's
kind of course.
Like, kind of cool. So, and I'm a fan now, so I just kind of consider I'm a fan too. So I just try to blend in with those guys. But that's kind of hard for me being as big as I am, but I still try to do that.
Yeah, because you know, you and I know that the old Richmond Web, if Twitter existed, you would have never touched that stuff back in the day. That wouldn't have been your that would have never been your style back in the day. You wouldn't have been tweeting.
If I was still playing, I probably wouldn't be tweeting. It's just, you put something out there, and if it's misconstrued or somebody interpreted something totally different, it can turn it, you'll be all on ESPN, and I don't need that type of drama. But I'm not in that lane anymore, so I can jump out there a little bit now.
So what are you thinking this week? Is it win number 3 against the Bills? Hey, listen, this past week when I saw that Hoyer was starting, I was like, oh, I felt really good. I told Bill, my producer, I said, man, I like this game. I'm not afraid of Hoyer. And Brissett has played really well, and he's been really efficient. So that kid I was afraid of the way he's developed. But Hoyer I wasn't. And this kid, Allen, if you can control what he does with his legs, I'm not sure he can beat you with his arm.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Because, matter of fact, I think I was at the Bills game last year, and I was really impressed how he was able to make plays with his legs. You're right. If you can keep him contained and force him to throw the football, I think you got a much better, higher percentage chance of winning the football game. So I'm sure the coaches have kind of studied that and done that, and I'm sure you're gonna come up with a good game plan. So that would be really nice if we could get the Jets and the Bills. I'm telling you, that'd be real good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, can you imagine the people that wanted Miami to lose because they're worried about a draft pick, and you want the Jets to beat you? I mean, that's impossible for me to ever accept anything. First of all, I'm not into tanking. I wasn't into the suck for luck thing in the first place, and I'm not in for tanking now either. I've been in locker rooms, man. I know how you guys think. You can't do that. That stuff doesn't exist.
No.
That just doesn't play, man. Coaches or players, or front office. Nobody can be quitting in the NFL. There's only 32 of those jobs, dude. You can't be doing that.
And you know, Big O, what I tell people, I said, and I tell them, I say, if you really think about it, I think we got 15 picks next year in one draft. So I say, if we get half of them right, that's going to make a tremendous impact on the team.
Yes.
If we just get half of them right, you know what I'm saying? If we just get half of them right. And I don't think people think about that. So I think we got 3 first, maybe 2 or 3 second. So I'm going to tell you what it kind of reminds me of, but it's almost like when Coach Jimmy Johnson took over the Cowboys and they traded Herschel Walker.
Right.
And he got like 14 picks, but I think that was over a couple of years. This is like on steroids or got a turbo behind it on a big engine that all of them are lumped into 1 year. So it's like, oh, they didn't play well last year, but next year, I'm telling you, it's probably going to shock some people. So I'm looking forward to it.
Not only that, Richmond, think about this. It's not just the draft, okay? He finds Preston Williams in street free agency, Mark Walton in street free agency. He gets Sam Egwuvon out of the CFL. We have a front office that is not just unearthing players. Taco Charlton off the waiver wire. It's not just about the draft. draft. It's like Jimmy did. I'm going to find Aronde Gadsden. I'm going to find Mark Dixon. Yeah. We have a front office. They have cap space, right? They were creative with it, with Robert Quinn, with Ryan Tannehill, with the last one that they got another draft pick out of it? Was it the Kenyon Drake one? I mean, these are things.
Yep, that was the last one.
Right. They're using their drafts, their cap space to get draft capital. They're using free agency to improve their team. They're using trades to improve their team. They're trying in every way possible of finding talent, and they're finding it in different places. So it's not just those 15 picks next year. It's everything else they could also find in other places, because if you could find a Preston Williams, who, man, this kid might turn out to be a number one, number two wide receiver for you. If you can.
That's number 18. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. You find that in street free agency? Are you kidding me, man? I mean, that's what makes me feel good about the Dolphins' future now.
And I learned this about, you know, Coach Flores. They say he kind of did everything, but he's worked on the scouting side and he's worked on the coaching side. So he doesn't necessarily have to just rely on the scouting department. He can put on the tape for him and say, okay, he already knows what to look for, how to evaluate players, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And like you said, picking up some of those guys, adding the pieces where you are. And a lot of times it's not that a player's not good. They just didn't know how to use him to his strengths or weaknesses in another system. And you pick up that guy and you say, okay, I know how we can maximize his talent. And they'd be like, wait a minute, this guy, he couldn't hardly make the team over here, and now he's a superstar down in Miami. So I think you're going to see more and more of that. I agree. It's not just the draft, but free agency and knowing how to go and acquire veterans. And, you know, they looking everywhere. It's not just saying we're going to do it one way, but they're exhausting all resources and efforts to find these type of players to build it the right way.
Hey, not a superstar, but an impactful player for Miami and helping out. Vince Beagle. He was a backup in New Orleans, a special teamer. They bring him here and they use him as a pass rush specialist. And the guy's gotten to the quarterback a bunch of times, a bunch of QB hits. He's helped out in a big time way. That's like these kind of things. I as a draft guy, as a personnel geek, I don't overlook this kind of stuff. And to me, here's the other thing. You just mentioned it. Here's Chris Greer. This shows you how good this guy is. He doesn't have an ego, because he goes and he hires Reggie McKenzie, who was phenomenal in Oakland. He brings in Marvin Allen, who was phenomenal in Atlanta and Kansas City in personnel. And then his first coaching hire is a guy that also knows personnel in Brian Flores. So he puts his ego aside to bring the best people he thinks possible for his football team to make them better, because he's not sitting there going, I'm going to make all the decisions, I'm going to pick all the players. No, he knows Brian Flores can help him out, he knows Marvin Allen can help him out, and he knows Reggie McKenzie has a world of experience and success that he can help him out. That's why I keep telling people that this is not the same old Dolphins. The front office has changed. And it's going to get, and people are going to be surprised over the next couple years. And watch this, Richmond. There are going to be other people that are going to tear down their teams the way Miami did. It's not going to be you'll see. They're going to do this kind of a rebuild. You'll see.
Yep, I agree. Like you say, if you get the right people in the front office and you get people that want to work together rather than worried about their ego or who gets credit for this or that, and it's all about winning, that's the way you want to build it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Follow Richmond, by the way, on Twitter. He is active on Twitter, at Richmond Webb. What's the next Dolphin event that you're going to outside of a game? Is there one out there that fans can see you at? Just out of curiosity, I don't know if you have any plans.
Yeah, I'm in Houston. Yeah, normally it's when I come down to a game. Thinking about coming down to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I think that's in. So.
All right.
Yeah.
All right,
hopefully, good. I can find something to do while I'm down there. But yeah. Other than that, that's it.
Are you going to Vegas for the draft?
I thought about, you know, I did the draft. I was fortunate the Dolphins asked me to do the draft in Nashville, and we had a really good time. So yeah. I'm thinking about going out to the draft in Vegas.
Yeah. Okay, so well, we got a bar. It's called Tommy Rockers, and it's going to be a Dolphin draft bar. We're going to have about 300 Dolphin fans. We're going to be broadcasting all 3 days there. I'm going to be broadcasting the whole draft there, all the picks. So you are welcome to come by for a couple of minutes and sit down with us there in Vegas with a couple of hundred Dolphin fans and enjoy a little bit of the draft if you're out there during the weekend, all right?
Okay.
All right. So we'll have some fun out there.
That sounds good.
That's going to be great, man. To be in a room with 300 Dolphins and that draft, we're going to own Vegas, Richmond. I mean, Aqua and Orange is going to be all over Vegas because all I hear is Dolphins saying, I got my plane ticket. I got my room. I'm ready to go. The Dolphin Nation is going to be strong in Vegas, big time.
Yeah, we might better take some T-shirts and stuff out there so we can give some other people some chances to jump on the bandwagon.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Definitely. We're gonna have some special T-shirts made for it also, and we'll have some fun with it. Richmond, thank you for taking some time. You've always been a class act. Thank you for joining us on the show here. I'm sure we'll do it again down the line, and hopefully we'll see you live in Vegas.
Sounds good, Big O. You have a good day. Thanks for having me on your show.
You got it, man. Right. Be good. There you go. Yep. The great Richmond Webb joining us here on the show. It's always good to have Richmond on, man. Love having Richmond on. He is an absolute class act. Just one of those guys. Now, you knew that if there was a controversy or something, Richmond wasn't going to get involved in it. Okay, so you weren't going to go to sound bites to get for him on that. But I'll tell you what I love about Richmond Webb, not just a human being, because anybody that knows Richmond Webb knows he's a phenomenal human being. But what I loved about Richmond was the class he carried himself with every single day. And if it was a good moment, it was easy to interview him. If it was a bad moment, when the team didn't play well, it was easy to interview him. And that's not easy to say. There's a lot of guys that struggle with losses and defeats, and they are in this state of depression, and they are pissed off and moody and things like that, and you can't do anything about it. Everybody handles it differently. And there are some guys that can compartmentalize, and that they're pissed, and internally they're pissed, but externally, at the moment that they have to do their job with you, they will at least be professional and control themselves at that moment in hand, as long as you're being respectful in your questions, too, as long as you're not being some kind of a jerk and trying to stir crap up. But overall, that's what I loved about Richmond. And Keith Sims, his partner in crime, by the way, was the same way. That was a guy that you never had to worry about. Another guy, you would walk in the locker room and handled everything with freaking class. Huge Keith Sims fan also. Those two guys made my life easy. Tim Ruddy made my life easy. Mark Dixon made my life easy. But linemen usually, actually now that I think about it, most of the linemen were pretty good. They were pretty good dudes, man, overall. They weren't really the moody bunches. You had it with some other guys. I will say that. But I personally appreciate it because the one misconception that's out there, and I would say, and I would defend most of my media brethren, most, not all, but I think most want to walk into a winning locker room. Most media members hate having to cover a losing locker room. They'll do it, and they got to do their job and whatever, and you get through it, but it is a pain in the ass. It really is. It sucks because it's not fun. It's not. Think about it. in your worst moment, when you have failed in something, and then somebody's walking up to ask you about what happened in your worst moment, and how many times can you tell in your worst moment, you tell your friend or your family member or your loved one, just, I don't want to talk about it right now. And it's not done in public. And you could get away with it. Nobody cares. And everybody says, "Oh, I understand." But then when the player does it, it's not the same, right? Oh, unprofessional. You got to handle it the right way. But meanwhile, behind the scenes for all of us, we're like, "I don't want to talk about this right now. Leave me alone." And you walk away and you leave your cousin, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, father, grandfather, uncle alone. And nobody finds out about it. But as an athlete, you do it, everybody finds out about it. So it's a twisted thing that goes on. 786-322-1105 if you want to get in on the program. That's 786-322-1105 if you want to get in on the show. The other way to reach out to us is on the, that's the accidentlawfirm.com text line. You can also reach out to us on Twitter. That's at Big O Show. And Instagram, it's at Big O Radio Show. That's the other way to reach out to us here on the program. All right. I thought Armando did a really nice job, because a lot of people are wondering, where's Josh Rosen? What's he doing? After he fell by the wayside, is he trying to recover from all of this? And Armando wrote a nice in-depth article and talking about what he's doing now in this process. And it says that I'll read some of it for you. It says, the quarterback that could not author the kind of results Fitzpatrick currently is getting didn't just fade into the shadows and allow himself to be forgotten. Rosen didn't leave the big stage and simply become an observer, little say in the presence and no prospects for the future. Rosen recognized he failed, and he's been attacking the failure behind the scenes. This is Rosen. If bad things happen, everything didn't go correctly, Rosen said during a private moment this week. So you have to figure out what went wrong and fix it. I got a lot of things that I'm fixing, and I think I'm learning a lot and fixing a lot of things behind the scenes right now and developing a lot of skills. So he goes, you know, Armando goes on a ride and talk about the losses and everything that went on. And that Rosen needs more than to improve on physical aspects of playing quarterback. He seems quite gifted in that area. Where he needs to improve on is the way he studies, the way he watches film, the way he plans, the way he prepares for specific defenses and their coordinators. He goes, this is Rosen now. I've made a lot of drastic improvements since I stopped starting just by watching Fitz prepare for a game, Rosen said. I'm shadowing his schedule and seeing how he functions and what I can do for myself and get a lot better at studying and watching film and anticipating where the ball is going. It's a fascinating process that begins with the quarterback room and does not end there. The Dolphins carry the process to the field, where Fitzpatrick gets most of the practice repetitions to prepare for the next game. But Rosen gets challenged as part of his prep work for that game and the future. We ask him after every snap, hey, what was the coverage? And did you see what went into that? No, did you think you went into the right place with the ball? Things of that nature, Brian Flores says. So he's constantly being evaluated, constantly being asked questions. We do a lot with him. We time every one of his throws, make sure he's getting it out quickly enough. So there's a lot of things that are happening in practice and that are helping his development. I would say that I think he's taken to it, and he's getting better. Rosen doesn't let work end at practice. He takes it to the game as well, even though he's generally not playing. He says, I'm standing on the sidelines, and I'm trying to play the game from the sidelines, he says. I'm trying to guess where the ball is going to. And each game, I'm getting a little better and better at where the ball's going, where I think Fitz is actually going to throw the ball. So it's basically banking information for later on on because I'm going to see these coordinators in the future. I'm going to see these players in the future. And even now, the second time we're playing the Bills, I understand them that much better than the first time. So much of playing quarterback in the NFL is a product of experience. And it's easy to forget that Fitzpatrick is in his 15th NFL season and Rosen is in his second. And it goes on to say, Fitzpatrick, to his credit, is welcoming his younger teammate and letting him absorb what playing the position entails. Yeah, he's always here before 6 o'clock. He's always here late when we're watching film. Whatever else, Fitzpatrick said of Rosen, Josh is putting in the time. And I think right now, too, he's doing a lot of listening and a lot of observing. And I think that's really important at this point. He wants to be in here. He wants to learn. He wants to do all the right things. The longer you do that and really dive into it, the better you're going to get. Okay? And then Rosen goes on to say, the start part isn't up to me, but succeed part is, yes. I will always continue to grow as a football player because it's a very interesting game, particularly this year when I've had to learn mic points and fronts and run games and watch how Fitz functions with all the moving parts. Listen to that point right there. Because it's a very interesting game, particularly this year when I've had to learn the mic points and fronts and run game and watch how Fitz functions and all the moving parts. This kid was remedial as hell. There's just so many levels to it, and I didn't really realize that, honestly, until relatively recently, and it's kind of cool to be able to dive into those different levels as I watch Fitz play and how he functions. And I think if you're a Dolph fan, I think you got to love every part of that. One, the fact that you hear he's embraced this. He's not fighting it. He's not ignorant about it. He knows. I came up short. I didn't do it. And now he's doing everything that he's supposed to do. And when Fitz tells you he's there before six, he's there late after there, we got to watch film, he's there. And he's taking that process on the practice field and they're constantly testing him. We got to understand this, ladies and gentlemen. And some of you may want to understand this and some of you may not want to understand it, okay? I like this coaching staff more and more every day that I see them because they actually coach. They are actually preparing their players to be better football players the next time they take the field. Because Nick Needham did not look like he belonged on an NFL field when you watched him in the preseason. All right? I tweeted out. You can go find the tweet. It's somewhere in August. I've seen Nick now. I don't need to see him anymore. Now he's using his last name for Needham. I don't need him to see him anymore. I don't need him. I don't need him around. I was using that joke. Kid's gotten better, man. He might end up becoming a backup for you next year if you end up drafting starters. I'm not telling you he's a starter, but he might end up becoming a backup. Mike Gesicki's a better football player now than he was last year. Raekwon McMillan is a better football player now than he was last year. They picked up Preston Williams off the street and brought him along.
Lots of crazy pineapple players.
Most players, Michael Dieter, is getting better under this coaching staff. Josh Rosen could not get better, and you just heard it. It's not the physical part of it. He can make the throws, all of that. It's the mental part of it. He doesn't know how to read any of this stuff. They didn't teach him squat at UCLA. They didn't teach him anything 1 year in Arizona. And now, when I read that article, now I believe more than ever that maybe my theory that they said, hey, we can't evaluate this kid right now. He's so green. He's so behind that we're doing a disservice to everybody else in the offense. We're doing a disservice to him because he's not ready to be evaluated. And we know what the answer is already. We need to take this kid back down to football 101 and teach him the quarterback position at this level. He's intelligent. He's willing to learn, but he doesn't have the knowledge. And so it's really hard to ever succeed at anything without the knowledge. Bill and I are doing something now that I know the radio part of all of this, like the back of my hand. I've been doing it for 30 years. I don't have a problem with that. Now, all this other technical stuff that we've had to go and learn and assess.
No. I didn't know nothing.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying.
March 26th.
I don't know it either is what my point is.
Well, yeah.
But my point is that it's all a learning process for us. This the technical issue of all of this.
Yeah.
Okay, I can do a radio
Overwhelming.
Show. I can prepare for a radio show. I can talk sports. All right, that's not a problem for me. I'm good with that.
No, to the tune of like an eight-hour show now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even, I'm not saying I'm good at it. I could do it. That's all I'm saying. But all this other stuff, it was kind of new to me. The business side of it, all that other stuff that I've got to put together. And, you know, and it's come together. It's been great. But my point is, I mean, websites, all this, I don't know any of that stuff. I got to learn about all that. That's the problem with this kid. I can relate. You can relate. We can all relate to Josh Rosen because at one point or another, you started a new thing without a lot of knowledge about it. And you had to learn the knowledge. You had to acquire the knowledge, let me say it properly, so you can then do your job effectively. Right? Because I'm sure we've all started a job that we didn't have the knowledge, and we were kind of doing the job, but we weren't doing it efficiently. We weren't really super productive, but we were just getting by. But every day we got a little piece of knowledge of how to do this, how to do that, how to do that, how to do that. And a month later, 5 months later, a year later, whatever it took, you're a completely different employee, right? You're a hell of a lot more productive because you have the knowledge. And this kid does not have the knowledge. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what he's reading. He doesn't even know what he's seeing. Now he's learning what to look for, what to point out, what is coming, so he can then anticipate where he needs to go. Because we hear that line all the time, right? That the great ones come to the line and they already know where they're going. Because they see where the defense is lined up. And that's why defenses have to kind of cover up their scheme or whatever, and they got to change it up pre-snap right before. So they give the quarterback one look, but they're going to another because they know the veteran quarterback will figure you out if you stand exactly where you're going to run that defense. He's going to know, okay, I know what you guys are doing, and I know where I'm going already. So when he takes his 3 or 5 step drop and he plants that foot, that ball's already going out because he knows where he's going. He already anticipates that receiver is going to specifically beat that corner for this play. That tight end will specifically beat that safety on this play because of the coverages that you guys just put out there. I've watched it over and over again. This play we're running will burn that section of the zone. And when he's dropping back, he knows exactly where he's going. You think Josh Rosen, pre-snap, looks at a defense and knows where he's going? He has no idea. Like most young quarterbacks. That's where we have to sometimes assess everything and say, we don't have all the information as fans and media members. Now we're getting it. Now we're getting the answers of why Josh Rosen isn't growing fast enough. Because it's what you have experienced, it's what I've experienced, it's what I'm currently experiencing. You need knowledge to do all the things that you're going to do in your job. And if you don't have that knowledge, you're not going to be efficient. You're not going to be the best employee. But when you do have that knowledge, aren't you kicking ass? Aren't you a great employee? That's what this kid needs. And it's going to take some time because he actually has real coaches now. It's what the Heat does with players. they grab a guy, and you're Derek Jones Jr., and you come in, and you're just an athletic pogo stick. Okay, that's great. You can jump through the roof. That's fantastic. We got to teach you how to pass the ball. We got to teach you how to defend. We got to teach you how to shoot. We got to teach you how to finish around the rim. We got to teach you everything else about the game to make you a better basketball player. And that's what they do with all their players, right? Even bum-ass Hassan Whiteside was a bum and a lazy ass when he got here. They got the most out of that lazy ass than anybody else. He did things here he never thought he could do and never did in the NBA because they got the most out of you, even though you're a loser. And that's, to me, that article, when you look at the track record overall with other players on this team, then I have to say, okay, they need time to work with this young man because he's not ready. Fitzpatrick's telling you, Flores is telling you, his play is telling you. Everything is there already on display. So things have to change. And what has to change? He has to take a step back and watch what's going on and watch a 15-year veteran break down film, attack a defense, understand what's going on, pre-snap, everything. He's got a lot to learn.
Oh, let me ask you a question. Considering he comes from a Division One, and I mean UCLA by no means has been a power, but they're in the Pac-12. They do have a bit of a tradition, okay, to come from that school and
what
then
tradition.
Well, I mean, they've had decent teams. UCLA.
What tradition?
They have played in a couple Rose Bowls back in the day.
Right. That's what. Yeah, so we're talking
right.
Dolphins
not
again.
Recent, no. Well, I mean, they're the Division
Dolphins,
One.
The Dolphins.
Pac-12.
The Dolphins have one because they don't either. It's like UCLA. Yeah, they haven't.
It's once upon a time.
Right. They've been irrelevant.
Okay.
For
now
the UCLA's a joke.
Okay. To then be in an NFL team. And for this guy to come to us and be this green, is this not a little bit surprising?
No, it's not.
Really?
No, it's not.
It's about coaching?
No, it's not, dude, because this is why Steve Wilkes got fired after a year in Arizona, because obviously
Are these coaches incompetent, man?
Well, in college, it's different. Remember, in college, you don't have to think because they hold up a card and everybody then has their job. In college, they're not teaching the quarterback anymore.
You run the play, I call.
To learn everybody's responsibility. They just know where they're supposed to throw because everything's been taught for you and everything's been thought for you because the guy holding up on the sidelines is looking at their defense going, okay, this is the play you got to run. Oh, and this play I got to throw to the hook on the left side. So he's dropping back, and that's where he's going already. And he already knows. And even the receiver knows, oh, this is my play. That's all. It's remedial.
And, I was going to say dummy down.
And but it's like that all over because we have put so much pressure on the coaches to win and that their jobs are on the line. They don't allow quarterbacks to think for themselves anymore. Whereas 30, 40, 50 years ago, when quarterbacks called plays out on the field, even on the NFL level, they would call plays. That's because the coach allowed them to run the offense. Now, the coach is calling every play in the NFL. And in college, they're not letting the quarterback call any plays whatsoever. They're calling all the plays on the sidelines because they don't want their quarterbacks to think for themselves. That's why quarterbacks are remedial nowadays because we don't teach them. Why? Because coaches refuse to trust them because their jobs are on the line. And we fire coaches like we change underwears. So they say, I'm not letting that guy think for me. I'm not letting that guy call a play for me. It's my job on the line. They're not going to fire that quarterback. They're going to fire me. So you're going to run the play I call in because I know what's right, even though it shouldn't be that way. The guy that would know what's best is the guy that's running the offense on the field every moment. It's the quarterback. That's why Marino and those of you that aren't old enough, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But Marino and Elway and Montana and you name it back in those days, they ran the offense. They called all the plays. They didn't have to look to no sidelines. Obviously, players, coaches did want specific plays. They'd send something in. But the quarterback had the power to change whatever the hell he wanted. Shula probably got only 30% of his plays in because Marino probably changed it 70% of the time. But there was a trust factor there. Shula trusted Marino. He trusted Greasy. That if Greasy opted out of a play, Shula knew that Greasy knew what the hell he was doing. Just like Don Strock, I'm sure. If Don Strock changed the play, Shula wasn't going to argue with him. If it didn't work, he might have gotten ripped. But he wasn't going to tell you that you didn't know what the hell you're doing because he trusted you. He coached you up to trust you. And that's what's going on here. They got to coach Josh Rosen up to trust him. And right now, on the mental side, they know physically he can do everything they need him to do. But mentally, he'll never be able to do what he wants physically because he can't get through the mental hurdle, first and foremost. If you have no idea what the defensive front is in front of you, how in the hell are you going to succeed? And if you can't tell when they're disguising it, and if you can't tell which is the extra blitzer, how in the hell do you survive in this league as a quarterback? You cannot. It's impossible. And they know it. It's a really, really good article by Armando. Really, really good article. Really good football article by Armando.
Supposedly the first quarterback they credit with audibling at the line of scrimmage and calling plays, Johnny Unitas.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. Weeb Eubank and Don Shula. Those were his coaches.
Not too shabby.
Right, two Hall of Famers. I mean, give me a break. Two champions, two Hall of Famers, two great coaches. But it was a different style of coach then. There was a trust factor, and we didn't change coaches every 5 minutes in those days. We stuck it out with them. Nowadays, Bill Cowher would have been fired a long time ago, but he was lucky he worked for the Steelers. In those days, he didn't win his championship until like 13 years in. As a head coach, there is no way you survive in today's world as a 13-year head coach and not winning a title. It's almost impossible to do something like that. They would fire you. Yeah, he's pretty good, but he can't win a title. We got to get somebody else. They'll give up like 8 years down the line, and you win, but you're not winning a title. That won't even be enough.
Hello. In today's world. Some coaches only get a year.
Yeah. But if you're winning,
you see Adam Gase is the exception to that rule.
But if you're winning, you shouldn't be fired at all. Not a title. I'm just saying, if you're winning. In today's world, that's not even enough. There are coaches that get fired, and they win, but they don't win enough. And it's because they feel that the next guy is the championship guy, and there's very few of those. You know, it's just it's weird. But that article. That article gave me more hope for Josh. I really like what I heard from him in that article. And this is really important that there is no pushback from the kid at all about any of this. There's no social media stuff. Oh, I'm unhappy with my playing time. There's no Dion Waiters type thing. There's no delusional state like Whiteside that what he thinks he is, he's not even close to. None of that. He's not telling you he's a great quarterback. He's not telling you he's finished. He's not telling you that he deserves to be the start. None of that. The opposite. He's telling you, I understand what they did. And now they're explaining to me everything that I did wrong. And he's intelligent enough to actually understand. Okay, now I get it. Now I know why I'm not playing and what I need to correct. Because he's going to watch Fitz. He's going to then watch himself, and he's going to see the mistakes, and he's going to say, okay, now I got to correct it. And while he's in a game that he's watching Fitz and he's trying to guess where the plays are going and what those defenses are doing, those are incredible tests for him. Because the next time he lines up under center and he looks at that defense, he's going to go, oh, man, I've talked about this with coach 47 times already. I know exactly what they're going to do now. He just said in the article, seeing Buffalo for the second time, now I understand them more. That's what he needs. So next year, if he ever gets to face them again, it'll be the third time. There'll be more familiarity at that point. And maybe the kind of comfort zone that he understands what he's facing. excellent job by Armando Salguero, and really, really encouraging to hear that Josh Rosen has embraced all of this.